Welcome to Focus on Education, a podcast from the Center for Educational Practice at Union University's School of Education.
Today is March 18th, 2014. This is Eric Marvin, the director of the Roseboro Center for Educational Practice at Union University's School of Education. Today on the podcast, we have Dr. Kevin Trowbridge. He's here today to speak with us about Google Glass, one of the newest wearable technologies that also incorporates the use of augmented reality. Dr. Trowbridge serves as an assistant professor of public relations at Belmont University. He also has connection to Union University, having earned a Bachelor of Arts in Communication Arts with a public relations emphasis from Union back in 1996. Additionally, Dr. Trowbridge will be the upcoming speaker at the Roseboro Center event series to be held on Thursday, April 10th, 2014 at 6 p.m. in the Carl Grant Event Center on Union University's main campus in Jackson, Tennessee. The event is free and open to the public, and he'll be speaking on the topic, Learning Through Glass, an Exploration of Google Glass for Education. To register for the event, you can do so online at uu.edu/centers/edpractice. All right, let's begin our conversation with Dr. Trowbridge and learn a little bit more about Google Glass and his upcoming presentation. Well, Dr. Trowbridge, I appreciate you taking the time to be here today as a part of this podcast episode. Let's start with a very foundational question. What is Google Glass?
Well, Dr. Marvin, thanks so much for having me in. And first of all, Glass is the wearable computer with an optical head-mounted display that is being developed by that ubiquitous tech giant Google. It's currently designed to be worn as you would wear a pair of glasses. But instead of the lenses through which you peer for a clearer view of your immediate world, Google Glass features a transparent micro-display prism that's located just slightly above the line of sight over your right eye. And in that prism, the user is able to see the content that's acquired and projected by the mini computer that's housed behind a touchpad that runs along the right side of the device's frame. You've probably seen the pictures. You've seen people maybe wearing it. The image in that prism is really designed to appear as a 25-inch monitor floating about 8 feet in front of you. And in addition to that image and the computer does have a GPS and Wi-Fi capabilities. There's also a camera. There's a microphone. There's the built-in speaker. And that camera can record video as well as take photographs. And then in the very back is a small battery on the frame that rests right behind your right ear. And that powers the entire device. The device is controlled by voice or by using a touchpad, which allows the user to tap and swipe to control what is being displayed in that prism. But in short, Google Glass is just a wearable computer. And something that's interesting even about Glass is that some people love the design, others hate it. It's somewhat polarizing, interestingly, but once you get past the futuristic design that's received a lot of the criticism, we can really get to the more important question, I think, is what does it do?
Sure. And before we get to that question of what does it really do, let's make sure we clarify this to our audience. And so what you're saying here, this is a pair of glasses that essentially that you can wear. You're looking out into the real world and seeing the buildings and whatever is out there in front of you, that environment, the real right. world environment. But on top of that, you also have this kind of augmented reality. And let's explain that to our listening audience a little bit more too. So it's a sense of technology or a screen, mm-hmm. For lack of a better definition there, on top of that real world. Is this correct?
Right. That prism actually projects a transparent display. Okay. Through which you can see. So as you look around, the only obstructed view is more of the computer that's over to the side. But you can see through the prism, and on top of what you're looking at is the the images, the text, anything that the computer might be displaying. So it's really designed to be a transparent part of your interaction. And it's no more distracting than if you're wearing a pair of glasses. And I don't wear glasses, but sunglasses. So you see the frame, you get used to it. And looking through the prism, it's just as though you're looking through a piece of glass.
Okay. And so it is a self-sustaining technology in and of itself, or is this something that has to connect to a mobile device, a cell phone, or other device?
That's a great question. It connects to a Wi-Fi network. Or you can set it up to connect through your hotspot on your mobile device. And as an iPhone user, I use it through my hotspot. It's a little bit more seamless if you're using an Android device, but using an iPhone or an iOS device, it connects seamlessly as well.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit more about what it actually does as well, and in terms of what some of the practical application of what this does.
Okay. Well, obviously, you can use it to take pictures, record video, and those are the things that tend to raise the most questions. So if I were wearing it right now, you may have that perception or question of, is he recording this conversation? Is he taking pictures without me knowing? But it does a lot more than just record video, record audio, and take pictures. Remember, it's a computer. And as the computer, it connects to a Wi-Fi network. It uses your mobile smartphone to connect to the internet. And because Google created it, Glass has many of Google's tools built in.
Okay.
From searches to translations and maps and directions, emails, calendars, Hangouts. So these tools that Google is known for, they come as a part of Google Glass.
Okay.
And like any other computing device, the capabilities of Glass really hinge upon what applications are available. So what Glass can do, the possibilities are really endless based upon the applications and the software that runs on this mini computer. So it has been available in this beta phase for nearly a year. And during that time, developers have been working to create apps that will make the device more useful.
Okay.
A simple Google search for Google Glass apps or Google Glassware is going to generate some of the emerging directories that are online that feature some of these third-party apps. And those apps are called Google Glassware.
So to kind of help us get our mind around this, it really is kind of like a smartphone for that in the sense that the device itself has a lot of functions available to it in the hardware, but then it also is expanded by the fact that it has the apps that you can download and other software kind of applications available with it.
Exactly. You think back when the smartphone was first introduced, and let's sort of jump over BlackBerry.
Sure.
and just think about the first iPhone. It had limited capabilities early on. Yes, you could connect to the internet and you could do some things and get directions and it was nice and visual. But as developers began to become a part of the Apple's software developing program, they began to create apps that would make the phone even more useful. At the time, the users who got the very first iPhone, they were impressed with that technology, but they were equally frustrated with, well, it could do so much more.
Sure.
And that drive to do more is what led developers to create apps that made that possible. Now, we're talking about two separate platforms here, Android and,
sure,
and iOS. And with Apple being very closed, you had to go through Apple's very closed software developing program, and Apple had to approve your app. That's not the case with Glass apps. Any developer can download the software developer kit, begin to develop applications, test them, and even being a part of the Explorer program. So these people in this beta phase,
sure,
we know that if we install an app, Google's not responsible for what it does. They're not vouching that it's going to work properly. And I risk having to reset my Glass app computer or my Glass computer.
Sure.
But that's a part of this developing phase, to experiment and try new things.
Okay, and so you have mentioned there that about the Glass Explorers, and you are a Glass Explorer.
Right.
And what does that actually mean? And for our listening audience, Glass is, as you're indicating, is in a beta phase, and so it means that you can't just walk down to Best Buy or any other technology store and pick these up, but you have to be part of a special group in order to get your hands on these. How did you get your hands on Google Glass?
Oh, it's a little bit of a fun story, but because Glass is still under development and it's been made available selectively to those who've been invited to join the Glass Explorer program, and notice how I emphasize some of these words, because yes, from a public relations and marketing perspective, it's simply brilliant. Sure. The way that they're positioning it. Last spring, Google invited people to apply for the program and even conducted a campaign on Twitter to ask prospective explorers, the people who wanted their hands on this technology, Google asked them to tweet and share what they would do if they had the opportunity to get Glass. So using the hashtag, if I had Glass, thousands, tens of thousands of individuals, of technology innovators, shared their ideas. And then Google selected about 8,000 of those to join the Explorer program. I wasn't one of them.
Okay.
In fact, I didn't even participate in this Twitter campaign because it was back in 2012 that Google began talking about Glass, showed us some prototypes, and even at the time I rolled my eyes like most people, like, oh, what do I need another gadget for, another device? The Explorer program, as I said earlier, is a brilliant marketing strategy. They're able to identify technology influencers just through a social media like Twitter. Then using the scarcity principle of persuasion, Google was able to get early adopters, just 8,000 of them, you know, because you had to have one. It was able to get these early adopters to shell out $1,500 plus taxes to get their hands on this prototype that we didn't even know if it was going to work.
Sure.
But people were paying for it. People were paying to be the first and to get their hands on it and to help Google improve this device and develop apps to make Glass more appealing to this broader market. That's simply brilliant. After the first generation of explorers, after that 8,000 began using Glass, Google began to open up the Explorer program, still playing with that scarcity principle. We're very selective. We're highly selective here. Well, of course, that made everyone want it.
Sure.
And back in August, I went to a professional academic conference, and one of my colleagues at another institution, I knew that she was one of those 8,000. I greatly admired her. As soon as I saw her at the conference, I noticed on top of her head, she was wearing Glass. Notice it was on top of her head, yeah, which was really a unique placement. She wasn't wearing it across her eyes, but on top of her head, and I immediately said, "Is that Glass?" And she said, "Sure," and handed it to me. And I was like, ah. So I had the first experience, and for a few minutes that I played with it, I thought, this is ridiculous. Why would anybody want this? But as I did more research, I started to see its potential for education, for communication, for public relations. And then I thought, I want to be a part of that. So after this initial group of explorers, Google began using a form on their website so you could apply. And how they phrased it, apply to get involved early and help shape the future of Glass. Notice how that's appealing to our desire. I mean, it's appealing to our desire. We're a part of something huge and great. It's Google. Unlike early explorers, though, early explorers had to travel to New York or to California. So they had to pay the travel to get there for a one-on-one consultation for a fitting with Glass and a little tutorial session. Well, subsequent generations of explorers didn't have to do that.
Okay.
So it made it a little bit more appealing. I didn't have to get to New York or California for this. And I could simply order Glass, if I got invited, through an online website using my unique invitation code. And how I got mine is somewhat interesting, because I actually applied using their form back in late summer of 2013. I applied to join the Explorer program using my personal Gmail address. I thought, well, I'll use Gmail. Sure. It'll make sense. Yeah. I indicated that I wanted Glass for personal uses. Then I waited. and continued to wait. To this day, I continue to wait to get my invitation. Using that. However, in November, one evening I thought, I really want Glass. So I applied again using my university email address and indicated that I would like to use it for research purposes. Within days, in my email inbox was my invitation.
So they're looking for the credentials you hold, probably, and your experience and what you bring to this, because they realize that you have intentional purposes of putting this forward. And here we are talking about this on a podcast as well. So,
and you think that has to be very strategic. So they have a specific population that they're trying to get this to. Yeah, there are some individuals who are using it for personal reasons. I'm using it for research and educational purposes. But Google also knows that I'm going to take it into my classes, and I'm going to expose it to 100-plus students every semester.
Sure.
We're going to be having conversations about it. So people are going to be exposed to the technology because of the way that I'm going to be using it.
And so has Google given any indication about when these will be available in mass and so for the public?
At this point, no. I have no idea when Google is going to make it available to the broader public. They're continuing to make improvements to the technology. They've added accessories. There's now an earbud. There are shades. Now you can purchase prescription or frames for prescription lenses. So it becomes easier to assimilate into your current lifestyle, and so it doesn't look so science fiction-like wearing them.
Sure.
Rumor suggests that it will be available to the broader public later this year, but I think Google is being very strategic about getting the product right before they release it, because with any organization, they don't want to release the product and it fail immediately right out of the gate.
So is Google Glass going to be, and this new type of technology, is this eventually going to replace what we traditionally know as mobile devices? Is this really going to be the new mobile?
Wearable technology is a huge topic. It's a trend that is developing. We're seeing it with your smartwatches. I think at this point it's still more of an augmentation of mobile technology. It falls into the same category as mobile technology.
Okay.
We currently, even with Google Glass in the Explorer phase, we can sync it to our phones and it becomes a Bluetooth headset. So I can tap Glass and tell Glass to call my wife, and through my phone, it's going to initiate that call. At this point, the cell communication technology, the mobile technology for telecommunications, isn't built into the computer. But just imagine if it were, it would be even a further drain on the battery. So they're essentially, the technology is outsourcing that communication to your mobile device. So they're working in partnership at this point.
Yeah, so it may be something that is more of an addition to rather than a replacement for.
Right.
Let's switch gears here just a little bit here and think about this idea of the Big Brother concern that's associated with this type of technology. You mentioned this in terms of, the level of apprehension it brings to folks, as you are probably wearing this device and they see you wearing it thinking, are you recording them? And it provides a level of concern for others who are seeing this. And especially from a Christian perspective, can you speak briefly about such privacy and ethical concerns, all of these related matters?
These are great questions and ones that we are still grappling with. But as with anything that's unknown, we tend to be more apprehensive. If you haven't used it, if you're not familiar with it, you don't know how it's operating, so you don't know what people are doing behind that prism. However, as an explorer, now I know exactly what it sounds like, what I would see if someone were to be taking a picture or recording a video. So having used it, I have no apprehension, no concerns about interacting with another explorer. And I think most of our fears at this point are more fears of the unknown than an actual invasion of privacy. But at the heart of this question, is the fact that, Google Glass and even the question of privacy and ethics really embody some characteristics of today's personalized communication, of our use of social media channels. And I like to think about that in four areas to sort of focus and answer your question. First of all, accessibility. More people have more access to more information today than ever before. And technology provides that, whether it's our computer, our laptop, our smartphone, Google Glass. But as is the case with any technological innovation, there are always questions about how that technology divides users and how divisive it is until it reaches the early majority of users. So that was the case. That was the case with smartphones. That was the case with the internet. That's accessibility, just something to think about. The other is amplification. Our use of any technology comes with conditions. And usually those conditions amplify our personal lives, essentially shining a spotlight on what was previously private. We can choose to use the technology or we can choose not to. We still have the choice, and we have to understand the implications of making our choices as it relates to our privacy. Then the next characteristic is really anonymity and authenticity, which social media, new technology, even Google Glass is doing this. But for a number of years, I have spent studying social media and computer-mediated communication. And computer-mediated communication gives us a platform to be more vocal. That's amplification. But to be more vocal, but we can make decisions along the way that either anonymize or authenticate who we are. However, as technology is becoming more and more personalized, anonymity is becoming much more difficult to sustain.
Interesting point, yeah.
So as we begin using our cell phone, and let's even take it out of the context of Google Glass for a minute, but using our cell phone, we are no longer thinking about when we check in, using Foursquare or another location-enabled, whether it's location-enabled tweets or we're checking into a place on Facebook, but we're sharing this and we don't always think about how we're revealing where we are. We're sharing more about ourselves. And the way the technology is set up at this point, Google Glass is a lot less invasive than the smartphone that we're carrying around in our pockets.
Which I don't think a lot of people realize. I think a lot of people feel this apprehension about this because they look at this and they say, well, this is just even going to amplify it even more. But I think you're saying it's going to be, or it is the opposite of that.
Yeah, I really think at this point it is. And the fourth thing that I want to just mention is accountability. So I've talked about accessibility, amplification, anonymity, and authenticity. But also, this technology and any new technology really creates and creates a new sense of accountability. As we gain access and a platform to share who we really are, that's authenticity, we have to accept the responsibility for what we've been given. And that's the accountability component. And I've thought considerably about these questions of privacy and ethics related to Google Glass as well as other social media tools. And as a follower of Christ, what do I have to hide?
Oh, that's a very good point.
And now, before you or any of the listeners begin to retort, I think we should be concerned with defending our privacy as citizens and protecting ourselves and our families. And I think that's very important. However, we shouldn't fear the technology, but instead we should seek to understand it so that we can make responsible decisions about how to use it, using it more effectively to fulfill our callings, whether we're educators or communicators, using it to more effectively advance His kingdom, that is, as ambassadors of the Great Commission. And over the past few months, Google Glass in particular, as it's expanded in the Explorer program, we've seen increasing numbers of stories where people are voicing their concerns about Glass's invasion of privacy, restaurants and other establishments banning Glass. Well, these concerns about privacy and ethics are similar to the questions that were raised with the Polaroid camera. they're similar to the same questions that were raised with a smartphone.
No, and so as you're saying this, what's going through my mind as well is we often look at new technologies and often look at them at the surface level and say, well, how can I use this given device? And I think the broader question, the more important question, is one that we're saying, well, what purpose do I have in life in which this technology may be appropriate? Mm-hmm. And I think that there's relevance for that in terms of communication, in terms of education, but also in terms of our ethical decisions as well. And how do we decide what and how we should be using them? Any given tool, any given technology could perhaps be used either appropriately or inappropriately. So I think you make a very, very good case for this and explain that well. Let's come down to another question here about your upcoming presentation. You're going to be visiting Union University on April 10th.
I am.
To share with us a little bit more about Google Glass and its application to education. Without giving away all the details of that presentation, if you want to share with us a little bit about how could glass be used in this educational environment.
This is exciting, and I'm thrilled to return to my alma mater in April to share about my experiences as a Glass Explorer. I've been invited to facilitate a hands-on demonstration and workshop in Dr. Clifford's instructional technology classes. So I'm going to do that in a smaller setting so the students will have hands-on opportunities with it.
That's great.
And then at 6 p.m. that evening, we'll gather in the Carl Grant Events Center for the presentation that I've titled Learning #ThroughGlass, An Exploration of Google Glass for Education. And you hit on those things in terms of our calling and our responsibilities. Well, that's where it's all going to come together because, yes, from a public relations and a marketing perspective, I see lots of application for it. But as educators, we have such a sense of responsibility. And the responsibility we have is to teach our students how to use new technology effectively. And just consider how emerging technologies could potentially change the way we see teaching and learning. And while the essence of education really remains unchanged, that is the process of facilitating a dynamic encounter through the acquisition and the creation of knowledge, innovative educators are constantly monitoring the dynamic communication landscape for tools that can enhance the educational practice. And so on that evening, I'll be sharing some of the ways that I've used Glass as a learner and as an educator. I'll share how other Google Glass explorers are using it for educational practice. And then one of the exciting benefits of being a Glass explorer is it lets me reflect a lot on what I love about teaching, and that's collaborative learning. And being able to learn myself, share my experience with my students, and then in turn learn from them. As an explorer, I get to do that every time I share Glass with someone. Now, I don't wear Glass every day continuously. I know when I put it on and I walk across campus, I need to be prepared to engage with this thing that I'm learning about. Because as I share about my experience, someone starts asking me questions that challenge me, that make me think more deeply about the subject. And in this case, it's Glass. And then through their questions and their ideas, I suddenly get new ideas and take that as a path. They suggest ways of using Glass that I would have never thought of. And that's what we'll be doing on April 10th at Union. And give you a little preview of
sure,
some
if you
of the
don't
ways
mind doing
that,
if you don't mind doing that.
Just thinking about how Glass can be used in education. Because even though I don't teach in our department of education or school of education, I'm an educator. And
exactly.
And as I teach public relations at Belmont, one of the theories that I often include in my classes is Ev Rogers' diffusion of innovations theory. Because it's applicable, it's a grand theory, it's applicable to so many disciplines, education, communication, marketing, mass media, sociology. This semester, I've used Google Glass to help my students understand the components of that theory and how the innovation decision-making process works, how innovations are diffused and adopted over time. And then on a more practical level, So, like, let's just use it as I would a computer or any kind of technology. The possibilities are endless. And remember that hashtag ThroughGlass? ThroughGlass hashtag, it's commonly used by explorers to share the content they've created in some kind of social channel so that other explorers and other people can see what they've learned. However, I think it has another meaning for those of us in education, and it's really, that's what's informed my perspective of Glass for Education. And Google Glass gives us the opportunity to capture and share our perspective with our students, and it gives us as educators an opportunity to see the perspective of our students who use Glass. So through Glass, through their eyes.
Very interesting.
And one of the things that I've done in my classes as an educator is I've handed over Glass a couple of times to my students and asked them, capture our class meeting today. So if I'm lecturing in class and I have a student who's wearing Glass and is recording video, I know they're recording video. And it's different than setting up a video camera in the back of the room. So afterwards, and I've done this, I go back and I watch class from that student's perspective.
You really get to see it from their eyes.
I see the notes they're taking. I see when they're looking at me. I see my presence in the classroom. I realize I didn't explain that real well.
Yeah.
I can see from their perspective. I can see their distractions. And then I can customize and tailor my instruction having seen through their eyes.
And so as you look at the additional apps being developed for Google Glass, do you see that this is something that perhaps may be used in younger grades of education as well, even elementary, secondary school as well?
I think there are possibilities for using it from the primary education before kindergarten all the way through collegiate and even graduate school. There's a Glass Explorer that I'll probably share some examples even when I'm at Union in April, who is blogging about 365 days through Glass. And she is an educational technology coach in lower grades. And so for 365 days, that's her plan, is to share how students are using Glass and handing it over to those students and seeing them create, seeing them share their learning experience, capture that. And she's done a phenomenal job sharing that in a blog that will inspire educators of all grades. I'm not teaching kindergarten or first grade students, but she's inspiring with those examples.
Sure. And admittedly, the cost right now, it is cost prohibitive. But I don't think that, you know, as we look down to the future, we see schools currently adopting iPads on a one-to-one mm-hmm. level. And so perhaps it is something in the future. And only time will perhaps really tell what that future holds. But I think there's value in at least giving some thought and consideration to what the future of education may be in these types
Absolutely.
Of technologies. And it's one of the reasons that I'm really looking forward to your presentation, as I know other folks are as well. We are certainly glad that you've taken the time to be a part of this session today and to sit down and explain to us a little bit more about what Google Glass actually is and some of the potential applications for education. And we do invite our listening audience to come out on April 10th at Union University in Jackson to hear you speak a little bit more about the applications for education. Anything you'd like to add before we close this out?
No, thanks so much for having me. I think that session in April will be fantastic. Just the questions that we engage in. It's not going to be just lecture. It's truly going to be an engaging session. So come with questions and let us think together. Think critically about how this technology can be used.
Well, thanks so much for being a part of the podcast, and thanks for agreeing to come in April.
Absolutely.
This has been the Focus on Education podcast. Visit uu.edu/centers/edpractice to learn more about the Center for Educational Practice and Union University's School of Education.